Show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Not 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Yes, this is live for as long as we can keep it that way. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. We stream out through an enterprise connection via an ISP called Shentel. We're kind of captive. And I think I owe an explanation right off the bat. You know, we have had brutal problems trying to get a stream out for the last 3-4 weeks, and that problem has been one that has cropped up and gone away and cropped up and gone away over the course of at least 2 years, maybe three. Certainly, whatever the amount of time it is that we were. That we have been with this company. And it got so bad as to render it impossible to get a stream to go, whether it was a rerun stream, whether it was Dr. Bill, whether it was me, Bupkis. And so Ben Birch, and when I talk about the genius of Ben Birch, it is not, oh, by the way, this is the 7th day of May, 2014. It is not hyperbole. It is very much reality. Ben Birch is a, sure enough, no kidding, genius. And as a result, he was able to eventually get things, well, he found the problem. And for you tech-savvy internet users out there, here's the problem. In tracing where the stream starts here and winds up at the White Rose servers, Ben noticed that there was a tremendous amount of jitter on the lines, packet loss approaching 30%, and connection latency sometimes exceeding 1,000 milliseconds, which I'm told, in internet terms is damned nearly forever. And so a Shentel line technician, who's a really nice guy, by the way, they dispatched him yesterday because I had a Shentel tech online on the phone with me at the time that one of these buffering episodes was going on. And I said, see? And he said, oh, yeah, I do see. Oh, this is nasty. And so I conveyed to him what Ben had told me. And he said, this all makes perfectly good sense. So they dispatched a line technician out here today who has been here before on the same problem a year ago and a year and a half ago, who has gone back to his people and said, listen, this is not a line problem. This is a network problem. This is an engineering problem. And so what he was able to see by hooking into the cable, the really, really highfalutin cable modem here that also handles the phone system, what he was able to see was the very same thing that Ben had seen. And what he was able to see was that the fallout was happening about four hops up the line. And those four hops are somewhere within the Shentel system. They know not where. And therein lies the rub. And so that's where the problem lies. And yet, this afternoon, and you know, two previous Fridays, we've been able to get an uninterrupted stream out. The previous two Fridays on the front porch. Exactly, Mr. Gibson. 1,000 milliseconds is friggin' forever. 1,000 milliseconds, as Will from Chicago points out, is 1 second. And in terms of transmitting data on a beam of light, anybody remember the speed of light? Yeah. What's 1 second? Yeah, forever. Bon appetit, Bean. Thanks for popping in. So now all that Shentel has to do is go find the fourth hop. And once they find the fourth hop, find what gizmo inside the fourth hop, or wire in front of, or wire behind, or wire inside, is effed, and then maybe this problem will be solved. After us having spent thousands upon thousands of dollars with this company to receive what they never contractually, So that's where the problem is. And right now, we're stable. Now, we may not be we may not be stable in a minute or in 15 minutes or in an hour or three, or I may set up the rerun stream and it'll completely collapse at 3 o'clock in the morning when there's absolutely nothing happening on the network here. So go figure. But while I can get a stream out, for God's sakes, let's have a program. Because, among other things, I played hooky last night. Those of you who follow my Twitter and or Facebook feeds will know where I was. I'm not proud. I'm kidding. I really am. I'm kidding. I've mentioned before my dear friend who has done voiceover work in the past and, in fact, has been at least in part the voice of the horn, the announced voice of the horn, Brian Reznor, B-Rez to those who know and love him. And B-Rez is a promoter extraordinaire. He's also a truly ass-kicking DJ. So when he reached out to me and offered a couple of free tickets to the Juggalo Championship Wrestling match and big ol' hip-hop hootenanny over in Beckley last night, and I asked Ferg, and Ferg said, well, yeah! Well, it was on, and we were committed. Don't get to go out and do a lot of stuff like that, so free tickets to just about anything are a yeah. So that's where I was last night, and that's why there was no live program. It turned out to be, and I do not wish to sound like a guy who yells at clouds or anything, truly a cultural adventure. I hardly know where to begin. Dr. John and I had a rather, we shared an, because, you know, Dr. John is the Horn's resident anthropologist and archaeologist. And I've been to a lot of concerts in my day. I had never. And I've been to some hip-hop shows and stuff. I'd never been to anything like this. Wrestling combined with white boy hip-hop in clown face. And whatever review, one, thanks go out to B-Rez for the tickets. And it was a happening crowd. And Ferg had a blast. But we also sort of had a debrief on the way home. And I will tell you, and this is the truth, by the time all was said and done, I probably would have wept for joy just to hear three bars of Merle Haggard or one chord from Guns N' Roses. Either one would have done nicely. If you don't know who Insane Clown Posse are, you can look them up. Most people did. A lot of responses to my, you will never, here's a sentence you thought you would never read, Bob Kincaid is at an Insane Clown Posse show. I think this is the point in the program where I'm supposed to say, whoop, whoop. Dear God, I sound like such a nerd. But it was, but culturally, you know me, come on. I can't look at anything like this without reflecting on context. You know, little baby archaeologists are taught all about context. You know, where you find the piece of pottery, where you find the point, where you find the post hole as you labor away with your razor-sharp Marshalltown trowel says everything. Context is everything. Materialism. How is this thing used? There was a brilliant story out there. By the way, I got to share this with you because it is, after all, prayer meeting Wednesday. Yes, I know. We're just going to dispense with the formalities. Tim, I am 51 years old. Tim in the chat room. Oh, my God, Bob was at an ICP concert. How old are you? 51. I was not the oldest guy in the room, I'm surprised to say. But anyway, there was a story out there the other day where materials scientists and physics types have discovered how the Egyptians, using nothing but human brain power and some fairly simple tools and their own sweat, volunteer labor, how they moved those massive blocks of stone from one place to another in order to build the pyramids. And this is the perfect, this really is, this is a perfect prayer meeting Wednesday story. For years, Egyptologists, who are scientists who are absolutely fascinated with Egyptians, ancient Egyptians, and I guess presume that they're all gone and that somehow the... Well, never mind. Bob may never live this down. What? Ah, come on. I was being culturally adventuresome. But anyway, I didn't buy a T-shirt. I didn't. I just didn't have it in me. I can't walk around with a couple of really big white guys in clown face on my shirt. Anyway. So for years, Egyptologists were baffled because Egyptologists are not scientists. Egyptologists are mainly romanticists who have a passing familiarity with translating language and understanding, at least partially, Egyptian artifacts. But for years, Egyptologists had been baffled at how those crafty Egyptians moved those giant blocks of stone on those big wooden sleds, leading some to even go so far as to say, ancient aliens, perhaps? Which I've said before always annoyed me, because it suggests that our crafty human brains just weren't up to the task. Well, it turns out the riddle of how the big blocks were moved has been answered, solved. And the answer was there all along. And the answer was there in the form of a wall painting, of which the, and I think it was the Digi-Hotep or Hutep or whatever was the pharaoh in question. But there was a mural of the block of stone being moved, slid, whatever. And it showed a person standing in front of the sled with a jar pouring something on the sand in front of the sled. And for years and years and decades and perhaps centuries, Egyptologists had presumed that the little fellow with the jar was pouring a libation to the gods in front of the sled so that the gods would provide the magic by which the big rock could be moved into position to help build the pyramids. Turns out, no. Because the Egyptologists, in their romance, assumed that the Egyptians back then were every bit as romantic as they and would think first to pour a libation to the gods in front of the sled instead of wetting down the sand with water so the sled would move over it more easily. Well, there you go. Because that's what the answer is. The material scientists and physicists and so forth figured out that if you get sand, just dry sand, just wet enough, something like a sled holding a giant block of stone will just slide right over it instead of piling sand up in front of the sled itself. Egyptologists, living and dead, are forever embarrassed. What, it wasn't magic? Yes, yes, Stockton Larry, that was a faith-based rock movement. No, it was just water. If you pour just the right amount of water on sand, a sled will pass right over it. Mm-hmm. And my favorite part of the story was one particular line about why nobody figured this out. And it just bowled me over. I'm pulling the. It was the tomb of Digihui Hotep. And here's the line that just made me laugh. Talking about the mural with the little guy pouring out of jug. A splash of orange and gray. Oh, wait a minute, I think we're talking about Egyptology, so we need a better accent. A splash of orange and gray. It appears to show a person standing at the front of a massive sledge, pouring water onto the sand just in front of the progressing sled. What this man was doing has been a matter of great debate and discussion. How do you have great debate and discussion over a guy pouring water out? Well, because. This was the question, Bonn wrote in an email to the Post. In fact, Egyptologists had been interpreting the water as part of a purification ritual and had never sought a scientific explanation. When, in fact, that was the very answer, a scientific explanation. They were making it easier to pull the sled. And the reason I went off on that digression is because of the way that we make certain assumptions even in our modern world. We make assumptions, for instance, about how technologically advanced we are, and yet it's pretty clear that we really don't even fully understand the interweb tubes. God knows I don't, and even the folks who are supposed to be experts at it don't. For all I know, there's some little Chantel engineer somewhere pouring water on a router because the Egyptologist said so. But that's, you know, that's the way people think. I mean, that's the and academics do this. Oh my God. So I wandered into the Cultural Adventure Zone last night. And I got to tell you, while I've never shied away from hip-hop or rap, I was really shocked by the degree of misogyny. Hearing female humans referred to almost exclusively as bitches or whores, not even hoes, whores, grew pretty tiresome pretty quickly. And while I can fling around the F word like a real pro when provoked or inspired so to do, and while there are members of the Horn Family Commune, some names come to mind, who can work with obscenity the way that Michelangelo worked in stone, just saying, pass the effing butter, thank you very effing much, you're very effing welcome, becomes obnoxious and, frankly, dilutes the power of the word pretty quickly. So, there was that. There were a few. The audience was a high majority male. Apparently, inside this culture, there is a premium placed on performers being very obese. And overall, the circus atmosphere, the obvious comparisons were to the Roman gladiatorial games, wrestling, of course, saw people completely transported by what was obviously not real, to the point that they were screaming for one of the wrestlers to be killed. And I tried to watch fairly dispassionately and listen with an understanding that some of this was manufactured shock, manufactured outrage. I mean, I'm not so far gone that I don't remember things like Alice Cooper shows. Did he really cut his head off? Did he really hang himself? You know. Or Kiss shows. And Insane Clown Posse obviously got the shtick of face painting from, you know, Kiss. And then, of course, because I had stepped back and was being kind of dispassionate, I realized I was watching millionaires rap about never had nothing, I never had shit, and talking about not being loved by their mothers, and F the police, and, you know, I freely acknowledge I may be a complete geezer in this. But, you know, it was interesting. And so, like I said, Ferg and I had a real nice, he had a good time. There was an after party at a local establishment. I remained unaltered, untwisted, un-anything. I was driving. And what I tried to explain to Ferg on the way home is that, let's say, for instance, that I am not crazy about, don't even care for, okay, don't like, white Southern quartet a cappella gospel. I have my reasons. The fact that I don't like it does not mean, however, that I am unable to recognize when the form itself is being poorly executed. And so there was, you know, there was that. The women in the audience didn't seem to be having a real great time. Didn't see a lot of smiling. Didn't hear. There wasn't a lot of laughing going on. It all sort of struck me as a sort of faux counterfeit nihilism, which kind of got on the wrong side of me because this was taking place in southern West Virginia. And these are kids who are poisoned every day just by breathing air and drinking water. They don't need anybody to tell them about nihilism. I was, however, impressed with one local kid, young man, who had done his best to create art in which he talked about the realities of living with the addiction community in southern West Virginia. And at some point in time, I may even have a copy of it to play for you. I really was impressed. So that was my adventure. And, of course, I also stood back and sort of said, wait a minute, this is all theater. And to the extent that it's theater, this is a way of purging emotions, catharsis. And it may all very well be a working within the paradigm with which we have to deal, i.e. capitalism. You know, you're talking about F the police and revolution, and the world is very different now. At the same time, you got a merch table over there in the corner, please. Then there was the one kid I saw with the Che Guevara hat, worn backwards, of course. I bet if you could go and ask him, Che would... Ernesto, Dr. Guevara, would probably tell you that no, he never really envisioned his nuevo hombre as wearing gauges the size of silver dollars in their ears. Again, a reflection of my geezerhood. A lot of tattoos, a lot of ink. That's fine. That's fine. But at the same time, this faux disaffection that was being preached at the same time. I mean, so you're going to take disaffected youth, disaffect them some more, tell them the world hates them, and then they're probably never going to be able to get a job that pays above minimum wage. And they'll stay in debt and debt fear for the rest of their lives. And thus they become no problem to the 1%. So there was that. There was a lot. I mean, I was on full sensory overload. Some of the wrestling was good. I've been to some wrestling. Some was not so good. Obviously, they started out with the not so good and worked their way up to the good. At one point, a tag team match involved the wrestling match boiling over out into the audience and onto the concrete floor of the arena, at which point one wrestler chased another wrestler plumb out of the arena, up the stairs, and onto the gallery level, about 10 feet up, at which point they executed onto a hard concrete floor a most impressive throw, where the one guy threw the other guy over, but the other guy took him with him. And then we had the big drama of the Juggalo Championship Wrestling Emergency Medical Assistance Crew running over and putting him on the stretcher. And yeah, and later events, they got more pronounced with the fake blood, and there were Hollywood-style fluorescent light bulb tubes that were broken over people and had the fake blood embedded in them, which was, I gotta say, impressive. But then, at least for me, some of the magic wore off when the barefooted wrestler was able to walk over the shards of broken glass to break more fluorescent bulbs over the back of the wrestler who was getting it. Yeah. And then there were, of course, the obligatory chairs that were slammed. And finally, an entire folding utility banquet room table was propped up against one of the corner turnbuckles, and a guy was thrown into it two or three times by some sort of demon butcher or something. So, well, thank you, Tim. Tim from L.A. emailed, Bob, you were at an Insane Clown Posse concert. You are cool. I got very little cool left, Tim. But nonetheless, I had this whole David Attenborough monologue running through my head. But there was social stuff going on there that really did bear scrutiny. And on the way home, during the debrief, Ferg and I got to talking about the misogyny. And more than anything else, it was the misogyny. I'm never going to be shocked by the F word or any of the other fun words. But the misogyny was really off-putting. And the idea that there is a subculture that's been created wherein women are expected not only to tolerate, but to accept misogyny on that level is disturbing, because someday those young women are probably going to be mothers, which reminds me of another one of the songs, another one of the songs that was performed that evening, whose title, I think, as far as I could tell, was Fuck a Baby Mama, Fuck a Baby Mama, Fuck a Baby Mama. Until the entire room full of really big guys were hopping as best they could to free themselves briefly from the holes of gravity, and themselves yelling, Fuck a Baby Mama, Fuck a Baby Mama, a baby mama. And I, as someone who in the past has specialized in parsing poetry, I was hard-pressed to tell whether they were expressing a desire to have sex with a young woman who had already had a child, or whether they were angry with the woman who had already had a child and thereby being coitally dismissive of her. But it was repeatedly made clear that whatever that case was, she was both a bitch and a whore. So during the, as I said, during the debrief on the way home, I finally had to look at Ferg and say, some of the behavior you saw in there, if that had been any of your sisters, you would have behaved how? And the answer was pretty swift in coming, that it would not be tolerated, which, of course, is a form of misogyny in itself, because that means that women must have some sort of male figure to provide guidance as to what their correct behavior is. And the larger point being that while I did not understand, in listening to all the outright disdain, dislike, disgust, even overt hatred for females, suddenly a light bulb went on and I went, huh, honor killings. And I started thinking about the cultures in the Middle East where women are killed for any variety of reasons. And I realized that, despite the fervent screechings of the right wing, Middle Eastern folks don't have a lock on that. Because apparently misogyny runs rampant through at least some portion of this culture, and probably more than you, I, or anybody of our like-mindedness would care to admit. And I sat there wondering, I couldn't help myself, gee, if he votes at all, I wonder which way Violent J votes. Because I don't think you can be a very good liberal or progressive and promote misogyny. I shared some of these thoughts with Dr. John. And Dr. John is particularly good at taking the things that I write in a semi-coherent fashion and turning them and explaining them back to me in a way that actually makes sense. And I just love the language he used here. He said, disempowered youths, and we were dealing with them, need an outlet. They need somebody who seems to speak to them, not at them. The clowns, though, ain't the solution. It's carefully marketed, and the Juggalo brand cultivated to appeal to such kids with real problems and needs, but it's absent any sort of revolutionary critique. That sounds maybe too academic, says Dr. John, so what about this? If you're not going to make music about the real problems or about actual solutions, you take the easy way out. Aimless rage and angst packaged to build a specific brand of outsider. It picks up on rampant misogyny and violence because those metaphors have a lot of currency in the culture. Nobody seems to realize that it's deeply conservative. Again, nobody seems to realize that it's deeply conservative. It's all about reinforcing the status quo. He continues, God damn it, it's not video games and music that create a violent youth culture in this country. Video games and music simply pick up on what we're constantly fed through the media. But the media also aren't the problem. The media merely reports what's going on. You can trace gun violence, police violence, violence against women directly to the fact that we've learned to solve every problem with violence. And it starts in Washington. Michael Moore made this point so well in Bowling for Columbine. He said, as regards your discussions with Ferg, if you'll permit me, it's striking but not surprising that you had to really localize it for him to see the problem. Nobody can escape this education that we're not connected to everybody else. We have to be forced to see it. And then the challenge is to expand our horizon beyond our immediate kin and kind. So while the little underage girls were wandering around drunk out of their minds, I didn't see some little underage girl drunk. I saw somebody's precious daughter drunk. I saw somebody's sweet little three-year-old toddler walking almost naked around the room. I saw Daddy's little girl being referred to as a whore and a bitch. So maybe it wasn't the lesson I was supposed to bring away last night, but I brought it. I walked in, and I go everywhere knowing that I am toting around an absolute sack full of white privilege, white male privilege. And I try to keep it fairly closely checked. But sometimes it just gets really, really thick, and you have to reevaluate even more closely. So if I'm talking about someone complaining about something, I think I'm going to remove the verb bitch from my vocabulary. I'm not going to say never because I'll make mistakes. We all make mistakes. But I think we could all do ourselves a favor if we ever got to the point where we said, well, you know, I wish so and so would quit and that word. And let's use complaining or pissing and moaning or whining. Can we please take the gender hate out of it? Can we teach our children and our grandchildren that women are not simply life support systems for vaginas, but are in fact whole self-actualized human beings? I know some of us will try. And yes, at the same time that I was, I had also done some research before going to this thing, and I found a shocked, I tell you, shocked, breathless interview between Bill O'Reilly and Violent J, if that really is his name. In which, of course, because of confirmation bias, I was pre-inclined to root for said Violet J. Violent J. Because he was dealing with Falafel Boy, who, of course, was worried about misogyny in Insane Clown Posse lyrics, which is rather like water worrying about beer being wet. Let's remember, after all, that Bill O'Reilly is the guy who sexually harassed a fellow employee, telling her that he wanted to give her wine, play with her naked in the shower, and rub her down with falafel, because he was so effed up that he couldn't remember the word loofah. I'm sitting here getting, Ferg's in the studio with me. I'm sitting here getting some looks.
I don't want to rub you down with falafel.
I'll give you a glass of white wine, and then I'll rub you down with falafel.
You like falafel?
Well, do it live! Fucking thing sucks. Yeah. So, but, and then, yeah, I watched a Howard Stern interview with Violent J and Froggy, or whatever the other guy's name is. Shaggy. Shaggy couldn't join us last night. We were informed at the beginning of the program, that Shaggy was elsewhere in a hospital room trying to pass kidney stones. That, of course, was also part of the debrief. As Ferg and I discussed on the way home, the fact that maybe by the time they get to the next town, 250, 300 miles away, Violent J will be the one with the kidney stones, and Shaggy will have to MC the wrestling. That way you rake in the same amount of money with half the work. See, I've been to the circus. I know all about this way to the egress. And it takes a right... Sparky noticed a Ferg laugh in the background. He's not laughing so well. He's not speaking so well right now.
The concert kind of took my voice away.
You know, what with all the whooping and the hell yes and the F yes. And I mean, it was like the call and response of a church. The priest on stage says, hell yeah, mother effer, and all the supplicants below him repeat back, hell yeah, mother effer. What I witnessed last night at the bottom line, I witnessed human behavior. Human group behavior. That just really hasn't changed much in a very, very long time. 1,000 years ago, the ancestors of those self-same people were standing in the church, slack-jawed, watching the miracle of the Mass as a piece of cracker turned into Jesus meat inside the tummy of a priest. Really? It just happened? Hell yeah! Whoop whoop! And then, after the Mass was over, they gladly scurried out of the church and went over to the village green to watch the beheading of the heretics. At which point they jumped and shouted for joy as a person was brutalized, just as the wrestling was fake brutalization. None of this, however, takes away from the fact that B-Rez is without a doubt a man with a profound talent for, excuse me, for promotion. One of the incredibly craptastic radio stations in Beckley, West Virginia, tried to bring some sort of a show a couple of months ago and managed to get maybe 150 people out. B-Rez, with no radio station behind him and only his social networking, got nearly 600 people, which is sizable for a Tuesday night in early May in Beckley, West Virginia. Got him out and partying. And to be fair, everybody seemed to be having fun, except for the fact that, and this is a geezer moment, because like I said, I do remember that Elvis and the Beatles and the Stones and the Sex Pistols were all supposed to be harbingers of the end of Western civilization as we know it. All of these things never are. The parents of the flappers were shocked that their daughters had cut their lovely tresses into almost boyish, some would say mannish, bobs, and were wearing short skirts with fringe on them and doing the Charleston, and by God, their knees were being seen! And that, too, heralded the end of Western civilization as we know it, when in fact the end of Western civilization as we know it was being perpetrated by the flappers' parents, who were raping the American economy, and let's take that word out too, who were brutalizing the American economy on a bunch of phony baloney, faked up debt, bubble creating bullshit, such as we saw pop in, say, 2008 as well. Oh, this thing was an onion. It had layers after layers after layers. And in the end, I gotta say, I think it's good for me to get out to these things. I think it's, while, you know, I would far rather be at any number of other shows, they ain't coming to Beckley. And B, they're not gonna give me the insight into what the here and now is. Very good, very good. Referring to what happened in the 20s and in the first 8 years of this century, Mr. Gibson says, you know, Bob, I like to call it strip mining the economy. So that's where I was last night. And I had fun. And I was not without the ability to comprehend what was going on. But I am much more accustomed to, I mean, you know, I've walked away from concerts unable to speak like Ferg is now and barely able to hear. Hell, last night my tinnitus went away, I noticed, until I realized that the rest of a significant portion of my hearing spectrum had gone with it. I don't see myself doing up clown face anytime soon. Oh, one brilliant moment that many of you may get a kick out of. One of the wrestling matches last night featured a fellow who looked like he worked out pretty well, stepping into the ring wearing nothing but a pair of sparkly silver underpants. You know, little briefs, you know, like cheerleader panties. And the minute we both saw him, I looked at Ferg, and Ferg looked at me, and we both said to each other at the same time, Rocky! And Ferg said, keep it down, Dad. We'll never leave here alive. They wouldn't understand. So if during what remains of the program, the next hour or so, you wish to critique my geezerhood, you are welcome to. And I will take it constructively and try to apply it in the next installment, if B-Rez chooses to provide one. It'll be, really, I do. Bob, you need to get out more. I couldn't agree more. So I thought I would share that with you in this context. Over on, and you know, every day they get a little bit, they earn a little bit more the moniker that Sandra first attached to them, and they have since, that has since become permanently affixed here. Every day, Radio TV Rwanda, Fox News, does a little bit more to earn the Radio Rwanda moniker. Yes, Asa, you're absolutely right. Asa writing in. So I guess I was right about the Insane Clown Posse being similar to the RNC convention after all.
Yes.
I mean, on the one hand, let's do a comparison here. This July, Jimmy Buffett, somebody I've always enjoyed, will be playing Jim Justice's 4th of July concert down in Greenbrier County in conjunction with his golf tournament. And you may recall Jim Justice made billions selling off West Virginia coal operations to the Russians. So that the bodily integrity of men, women, and children and babies in the womb can be compromised, so the Russians can have a nice steel industry. Thanks, Jim Justice. The guy. But anyway, Jimmy Buffett knows nothing of Jim Justice, and, well, the check cleared, so he's going to be playing down there in July. And if I've been to a boku Buffett shows, I am a parrot head. And if I go to one of those, I expect to hear escapist songs about Caribbean islands with, you know, steel drum rhythms and boat drinks and margaritas and stuff like that. But at no point in time am I led to think that Jimmy Buffett is some part of the struggling proletariat. This man's a millionaire probably 100 times over. Maybe he's a billionaire by now. I don't know. He has worked his ass off. He's followed his dreams. He's learned to do stuff. Pilot boats, fly planes. Had his successes. He's made his mistakes. But at no point in time am I going to watch that show and say, yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, sing it, Jim. I mean, about how the man is keeping us from being able to go down to the Caribbean and live the life that we deserve, man. Because it's escapism. On the other hand, what I saw last night was people who probably don't worry about whether they can go to the doctor when they're sick, who don't worry where their next meal's coming from, performing for kids and pretending to be hard up and bad off. This does not include the wrestlers who probably are hard up and bad off. That is a brutally difficult occupation. And that's the difference. But anyway, Fox News Radio TV Rwanda invited on a young woman who is the co-chair of the University of California Santa Barbara's chapter of the College Republicans. And this was, of course, an outrage segment in which her task, Alice Gilbert, was to smear a college professor she had last year and never said anything about before by the name of Otis Madison. And on TV, she claimed that Otis Madison, Professor Otis Madison, had, quote, warned Ted Cruz supporting teabaggers to get the hell out of his classroom before he sent them home to their mothers in a body bag. Alice Gilbert continued,
when Professor Madison made his comments in the very first lecture, I was taken aback and offended. He didn't target me by name, so I did not feel that there was a lot the school could do based on a student just being offended at something said in class.
This was all part of something that Fox News had ginned up under the rubric of a hashtag called MyLiberalCampus on Twitter, in which bedraggled, oppressed, mostly white college students were supposed to talk about how they were being persecuted for their conservative values. That's V-A-L-Y-O-O-Z. Raw Story has the account. One deeply offended conservative by the name of Ty Seymour tweeted, I wore my CPAC shirt one day and got side-eyed from all of my professors. Hashtag sigh. Hashtag my liberal compass. He got side-eyed. Hey, kid, come over here and stare. Come over here and stand to my side so I can look at you askance. This kid's in college and he doesn't know the word askance. Side-eyed. Yeah, nobody took him out and beat him. Nobody threatened him. Nobody pointed a gun at him. No, none of that. He was offended because he got side-eyed. And then there's Madeline, whose avatar picture shows her in front of a Merkin flag. And Madeline was offended when my professor said I wasn't allowed to write a paper on America. How is that just a paper? How is that not a dissertation? Maybe Maybe she just needs to jump the whole master's process and get right out there and, America, a dissertation. Man, wouldn't you love to see the defense committee for that? And then Matt Reed tweeted, because he's a conservative, girl in class just said we shouldn't judge cannibalistic societies because, quote, it's just their culture, unquote, paren, students agreed. My liberal campus. Oh, God, 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 God. And as Raw Story notes, there's Chris Puyear. Last thing my professor said to me before I graduate, I hope your campaign loses. Huh? Apparently there were some, I don't know if this is humor or not. Dan Coleman tweeted, you guys gotta help. Mitt Romney got made fun of again on my liberal campus for believing that Jesus went to South America. Frowny face. Well, of course. Because everybody knows he went to North America. The plates were buried in New York. And Eden is in Missouri. Duh! And then there's some guy who bills himself as Alex, radio host. Really, Alex Jones, you're that desperate? My liberal campus brings all leftist speakers in, and Def wouldn't let me do a free speech on the white privilege lie. Misspells privilege. White privilege does not extend to spelling. And then J.C. Christian, patriot, who is one of the most humorous folks out there on the wickedly funny side of the discussion, said, my university allows Mexicans and women to teach classes, my liberal campus. But the one I loved was the poor young woman who it wasn't allowed to write a paper on Merca. What if it was biology class? Physics? What if it was Merca in algebra? Just asking. But when I read this story, I was immediately put in mind, and this is kind of a lengthy clip, but damn, it's so worth it. I was put in mind of this.
Hi, my name is Jenny. I'm a sophomore, and this is for all three of you. Can you say in one sentence or less what... you know what I mean. Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Such as?
Diversity and opportunity.
Lewis?
Freedom and freedom. So let's keep it that way.
Well, the New York Jets. No, I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world? Well, Lewis and Sharon said it. Diversity and opportunity and freedom and freedom. I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question. Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing. You don't look satisfied. One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America...
Not the greatest country in the world, Professor. That's my answer. You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it anytime he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is... There is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we... cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
And that clip is, of course, Drama from the HBO series The Newsroom, Jeff Daniels, of course, with the monologue there. And even that has some sexism buried in it. Notice how we were great because we were informed, and we were informed by great anybody, fill in the blank, men. Yeah, that 75-year career of Helen Thomas just kind of. And, you know, we passed great laws, and we rescinded bad laws, and we fought wars for the right reason. I have no doubt that the 7th Cavalry felt like it was fighting a war for the right reason when it rode out and slaughtered native peoples. There is no doubt in my mind that Colonel Chivington thought he was doing the right thing when he said, "Kill them all." Of women and children in an indigenous encampment. Nits make lice. I have no doubt that the framers of the Constitution were thoroughly convinced of their own moral rectitude when they crafted a Constitution that counted fully formed, self-actualized human beings who lived in bondage as only 3/5 of a human being. So let's take it a little easy even on that. But, you know, the point is well made. And you know what? I got an issue with the line about you're part of the worst period, generation period, ever period. Bullshit. The fogies think that about every generation beneath them. See above, see Elvis, see Flappers, see the Beatles, see the Stones, see the Pistols, see the Clash. with a subject line reading, White Boys Always Stealing Culture? Steve in China writes, tragic side, man fears the womb more than the tomb. Comic side, put Bill O'Reilly's mug on a can and call it Irish Pug. Love the topic. I love the email. Thanks, Steve. You know, there's more such out there. Let's not think that America, and we know that it doesn't, America has some sort of lock on misogyny. You know, you might be able to even argue that misogyny is lower in the United States, at least among non-Republicans and non-libertarians, non-birthers, tenthers, deathers, birchers, boogervores, etc., than it is in other countries. See honor killing. See women who cannot have their filthy, sinful faces be seen in public. See Russia. In a report at BuzzFeed, Rosie Gray reports that a Russian diplomat at the embassy in D.C., responding to question about the protest band Pussy Riot and the demonstrations that they have fomented in the former Soviet Union, opining about them, it turns out that the diplomat said, generally, I am of opinion that those pussies are simply not happy in their sexual life, and that makes them riot. They simply need a good fuck. Unfortunately, we do not have such capital punishment in our criminal law. Yeah. Lovely. Life is strange, he continued. Kill 12 people in movie theater, and you are a psycho boy, maniac. Show your ass in a nation's biggest cathedral, and they will call you prisoner of conscience. I think dude would have fit right in at the show last night. 13 minutes past the hour, and we are going to have some conversation tonight. I promise I am going to go onto the phone lines. You know they're open. 304-658-3333. I'm proud to announce that thanks to a number of people, namely Asa and Betsy and Carl and James and Kevin, we are only $10 from meeting Darlene's challenge, which she issued late on Monday night's program. Thank you. Because and because of the way fundraising worked out Monday and the way it's working out now, with the challenge, we find ourselves about $200 in the hole. So that's where, well, okay, I'm sorry, $100 in the hole, because I had a note from Irish Dave earlier saying that the tithe was going in the mail, so I will drop a note to Boss Man Wayne that he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck when he goes to the horn mailbox echo machine. So we probably need to raise about another $100 in the next 45 minutes or so, because I'll be honest, candid even, I don't know when we're going to be on the air again. I don't know from one night to the next. That's the glory of this enterprise internet connection that we pay such a princely ransom for. So there's that. You know what? You know the rest of the drill. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. The traditional mail address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Remembering, of course, that checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should be made payable instead to The Horn, because that's how we pay the bills, and Bob don't get the money. Let's do go to the phones. We've had a line patiently blinking for a while. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
I've got a new phone. I don't know if you can tell.
Nice. Well, it's pretty crisp. It sounds good.
Yeah, but I was, what you're talking about, I mean, the Stones and stuff, and, you know, going to the rap show, and who was that, what's the name of that group?
Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah, ICP. I mean, I've heard him on Stern's show, and to me, and this probably is just an age thing, kind of like you, I don't find him that quote-unquote entertaining. I don't find him entertaining at all. I find him boring. I just lose. Okay.
Here's my geezer moment. I was yearning for a melody. Anything. Twinkle, twinkle, little effing. I'm sorry. And in the context, it would be have to be twinkle effing twinkle little mother effing star.
Right.
Melody, please. Anything.
Yeah. And I was thinking. I mean, like to me, my favorite band. I'd have to go with the Stones or the Beatles. I would go to neck and neck. You know.
My thinking on that has transitioned over the years too. I used to be squarely in the Beatles camp, and I'm more of a Stones guy now.
But like you were saying, and I've seen some documentaries on them, or some video. On HBO or on cable, and just trying to look back objectively, I could see where my parents, are people older would have thought what you were kind of thinking about ICP, although. I was trying, I can glean some sort of value out of what the Stones were doing, but then am I being objective, you know what I'm saying?
Well, right. And look, I mean, here's an issue to throw in that was just mentioned in the chat room by Larry. I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a bit of a furor out there about the fact that the Stones have decided that, I guess, they need the money, and so they're going to play Tel Aviv. I find that disgusting.
Yeah, I heard that a while back.
Did they play Johannesburg back in the 80s?
Not that I know of.
Me either.
I've seen them four times at the Superdome and once in Vegas. And the tickets now, I mean, the cheap seats were last time $150. So. And, of course, part of that is to move the band around, but, you know, they're not playing for free. But... and the lyrics aren't quite as, you don't have too much new music coming from them, but, you know, the classics are their classics, you know. That gives me something to ponder, you know, because it makes you realize that my ego, me, or just like anybody.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm always willing to include, as a choice on the little multiple choice test that is my life, I'm always I'm willing to include Bob is just an asshole.
Oh, good. Poor Bob. Well, maybe an asshole who's right most of the time, and, you know, at least I have that little asterisk by it. At one point
in time when some of the wrestlers were entering the ring, I mean, you want to talk about feeling like your world had turned topsy-turvy. The intro music they played for one of the wrestling teams coming in was Marilyn Manson's The Beautiful People. I was thrilled. I was thrilled. I heard a song I recognized. And I'm like, yeah, The Beautiful People, The Beautiful People. Yes! I mean, and there was a melody.
That's my cutoff period, right around grunge, and after that, I just, that's those young whippersnappers music, I just can't, the rap scene, just, there's a couple of halfway decent rap groups, but ICP, I just, never has, impressed me. I mean, that's my geezer moment. So.
Well, and what I've got to sort out is, was that, you know, just me, you know, and to be fair, ICP didn't even perform. Violent J merely emceed the wrestling match. The rappers were all sort of downbill, psychotic records talent.
Right.
And, you know, everybody has a shtick. Their black guy on the bus, went by the name of Hoodoo and was with his stage makeup trying to channel the voodoo deity, I think Cemetery.
Right.
Or one of the other ones, and it, well, you know. Hey, who knows?
Yeah. But I just wanted to call you and let you know. I mean, I definitely identify with what you're saying, and I try to be objective even about myself, although I guess that's really, to a great extent, impossibility, or it's pretty hard to do, you know, because I think, oh, I'm just, you know, that's what I think, so therefore it must be so, but I try to keep it in check. So I'll let you go on that note.
All right, Jim, you take care. Good hearing from you, man.
All right.
Phone sounds good. Later. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. And you know, nobody as they age wants to think that they've become out of touch with popular culture. But I recognize that I am. And some is by choice and some is by default. There's no TV in this house. So consequently, I am miles behind on the things that with which people are amusing themselves to death. It just is. Randy pointing out, the problem with fogies is their judgment is 25 years out of date. For example, they tend to think that the ingredients in the supermarket food is what it was 25 years ago. They just don't get health food stores. Wait a minute, 25 years ago, health food stores were huge. Randy also points out, also, fogies tend to think that a job is as easy to get as it was before the 2008 crash. Well, then I'm not a fogie. But I am out of date. I think maybe, you know, if I had some sort of stamp on me like a Budweiser can's born on date, it would be, you know, culturally tuned in by. Oh, well. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, how are you tonight, Bob?
Jim, I'm happy to be on the air at this point. That seems like a minor victory in and of itself.
Yeah, I know you've had some problems. I hope you can get them resolved.
I think they would be most easily resolved by having, well, you know, a competent internet service provider, but that seems to be not on the menu.
Have their assets been degraded so badly that they can't eliminate the buffering?
Well, no. What it is is, I suspect it is, as with the rest of the American corporate model, that, you know, if you can just keep from putting money into infrastructure and keep from hiring human beings to make the system work, and people keep paying their bills, then that means the CEO makes more money, maybe even gets a bonus.
Yeah, you and I have had many conversations of many years past about the total system of American infrastructure, haven't we?
Yeah, and now it's. But the internet is relatively new, and it's.
Well, that's being overtaken by events too, I believe. You know, I remember the night when I read you the percentages of the total American infrastructure by the American Civil War.
Yeah, that was 10 years ago.
Not 10 years ago. It was about 5 or 4 years ago, buddy, and it was D minus. Everything. Rosebridge.
No, I thought I remembered still being on the air in Beckley at the time.
No, that was on this program, actually.
Okay.
But, you know, referring to assets being degraded. Did you by any chance see 60 Minutes 2 weeks ago?
No, no TV here.
Okay, well, they did this news article about American missile silos and the competence of the missileers who manned them. And it is it was incredible for me to see. Well, not really incredible, but
disheartening.
Well, it was shocking, actually, how basically the technology in these hardened silos, which are part of our defense triad, are like still based in 60s and 70s technology. That the phones don't work in many of the silos when the missileers are picking up telephones to receive relevant data, and I'm not talking about emergency action messages or things like that, but they don't even get dial tone.
Oh, dear. And couple that with the fact that how many Air Force nuclear officers got plumb busted for cheating on their how to launch a nuclear missile test?
That was part of it. Like, you know, the pass-fail rate was first 100, and it was 90%, and even the floppy disks that were shown that they could show, they were those big floppy disks that were almost the size of an LP record.
Dear God, you mean like a 45 to 5 1/4?
Bigger than that.
Oh, Jesus. We're still running those?
Yeah, still running them. And also,
God almighty.
Yeah, here's another thing that, you know, once the missile is launched, there are no destruct mechanisms on it if a mistake were detected. They cannot destroy that missile. Once it's out of a bullpen, it's going to be there until it gets there.
Yeah, it's not like Dr. Strangelove where there's a recall code for the B-52s.
Well, like I say, you know, most people would have imagined that when they built these engines of destruction, at least they would have a method of, you know, aborting them. There is no abort mechanism on board these missiles that are in these hardened silos. And all these hardened silos, of course, whomever the opposition might be, whether it's the Russian Republic or whomever, I know where they are, within a meter, and can take them out. So, I mean, you know, it was extremely frightening, more than disheartening, more than shocking. It was just frightening because I thought that the command system that governed these particular installations could have more safety mechanisms installed, but they don't. And they actually talk to the men and women, the missileers, as they're called, and they admitted readily. They said, yes, once we pull the key, or if we turn the key gently, that's it. It's gone.
Yeah, Marty just dropped an email in, Jim, and he says, the truly floppy old 8-inch disc. So that's what we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And he says, did Jim happen to mention that we were on hair trigger alert?
No, I didn't.
And I guess we are?
Well, I'm not sure exactly where that's coming from, but if he says we are, then there is someone who gave him that information, and I guess that's because of what's going on in the Ukraine or whatever. But as far as being, it's no longer DEFCON, but there's a new system in place. And I'm not sure about hair trigger alert or what.
But even if there's a new system in place, the fact that we're running computers that run 8-inch floppy disks, oh, my God.
Yeah, they
that's
are.
Probably, that's roughly the same computing power that sent us to the moon.
Effectively, it is. But what I don't understand, and what I couldn't really gather from the interview, is why are these birds these missiles not given a destruct mechanism. You know, that will be at least some measure of redundancy in case there is a mistake. And when telephones don't work and they can't get dial tones when they are performing their task, and when there's a widespread cheating thing among the people who are sitting in these missile silos, and their tours of duty go from 24 to 72 hours, that's a long time to be in a place very much in the ground. And I would think that being isolated that way, one almost loses a sense of reality. And also, the blast doors on one of them, they can't close it. They have to put a crowbar in there to keep it open.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No, I'm kidding. No.
No, I know you're not. And yet, the Pentagon budget eats up how much of our annual...
Well, that was another thing that was brought up in this particular news interview on 60 Minutes, that attention should have been paid long ago, and the maintenance of these systems. And I hate that they exist, but they are a part of our nuclear triad. And, you know, the thing I just wondered at one time was, why do we have these hardened silos anymore? Because everybody knows where they are.
And I mean,
everybody being, you know, those people who have spy satellites and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, what capacity to blow the world up, how many times over, does our submarine fleet have? Just by itself.
One missile boat could do it. One missile boat could do
it. And we have, I believe, 14 of those.
I'm not sure how many.
Yeah, the Ohio class, yeah.
Ohio class, and, well, they've had so many classes, I can't, you know, since I left defense, I kind of lost track of them. First they had the Sea Wolf, and I guess Ohio class, and the Russians, of course, have what they call their, there are two kinds there. You have the attack class, Los Angeles class, and you have the Ohio class. But, I mean, one missile boat could do it because, I think they carry 24 missiles, and each of those missiles, if I'm not mistaken, I'm sure someone will correct me, has 10 MIRVs, or 10 independently warded.
Right.
Independently
targetable.
Right. So, I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, but I just wondered when I saw this article, I was just deeply, deeply shocked.
Randy points out something by email. Jim, he says in the officer cheating scandal, the officers had to score a 100% apparently to pass the test, so there was a large incentive to cheat.
Yeah, that was brought out too, and then they decided whether they would do it on pass-fail, and I think the level may have been 90%, but they're playing with that now, trying to improve the caliber of personnel and how well it's... You know, they are to actually do the unthinkable. But I just wondered, why in the world do we have to have hardened silos when we've got subs positioned all over the world? Nobody knows where they are. And these hardened silos are nothing more than just targets that have already been reassigned by hostile forces. That's what I didn't understand. It seems as though they would be hopelessly out of date because we have such...
You'd like for humanity to get to the point where the notion of humanity destroying the rest of humanity would become hopefully out of date. We don't seem to have gotten there yet.
I wonder, by hair trigger alert, I just wonder what your caller meant.
I don't know. There was no further explanation.
Like I say, I've been asked.
But that goes to a larger issue, Jim. The competence for the firing sequence or the firing protocol for one of these missiles is one thing. But ultimately, the ultimate competency test for the usage of these things lies in having a chief executive who does not wish to be the person who destroys life on Earth.
Well, absolutely. But I
look back, and I mean, I'm surprised, Jim. We survived 8 years of a certifiable moron in charge of whether or not humanity lived or died. That's frightening.
Oh, I agree.
We made at the craps table for 8 years. We made our point.
Yeah, we did.
That doesn't mean that we're not going to... I mean, can you just say it with me for a minute? President Ted Cruz.
Oh, my. That is frightening, isn't it?
President Rand Paul.
Yes, very frightening.
I mean, never mind how they can screw the country up with their lifetime Supreme Court appointments. It goes back to that informal slogan about... Barry Goldwater in 1964. In your heart, you know he's right, but in your guts, you know he's nuts.
Yeah, I remember that one. I wasn't even 20 years old then, and I knew right then and there that man was nuts. And there was no such thing as winnable or sustainable nuclear confirmation of any type, no. But when I saw this thing on 60 Minutes, I thought to myself, my God in heaven, Anna. And this thing in the Ukraine is particularly worrisome to me because, I'm not even, these people in the Ukraine basically, and there are many people who are going to throw rocks at me, but I just believe that the Ukraine really belongs to Russia.
Well, I think at this point in time, the Ukraine belongs to Ukraine.
Well, I think,
and it's a question of whether or not Russia is willing to be so ham-fisted as to try to drag it, Estonia, Latvia, Belarus, back into some form of confederation.
Well, I guess that's based upon the fact that they lost 7 million men having to retake it from Hitler, and they've always considered it their sphere of influence. I mean, what I'm trying to say is this whole part of the eastern portion of Europe, or the beginning, east portion of Europe, is basically within the sphere of influence of Moscow. And I think only 28% of the American people want us to get involved in any type of overt military action with them. And like, there are only like another 20% who say, oh, well, let's get some boots on the ground over there, which would be absolutely insane. So, I mean, we simply have to recognize spheres of influence, is what I'm saying. And Mr. Putin has said he's going to withdraw troops and this, that, and the other. Now the for-profit media is playing games with this, that, and the other. But like I said before, Mr. Putin's been playing chess, and we've been playing checkers. And we don't need to be...
I mean, so far, with a few miscues with which I profoundly disagree, like sending Joe Biden to Kiev to suggest that they can frack their way to freedom, Obama has done just about as much as anybody could ask him to do. The only people wanting him to do more are the lunatics like John McCain, who want him to, send the missiles flying or commit the American military to the defense of Ukraine.
That's just absolutely insane.
Sure it is.
I mean, you've got to recognize spheres of influence of different nations. And, the Russian Republic is a fait accompli. It's there just like we are a fait accompli. But yet they seem to have been playing a better game than we. And this whole thing is economics. This whole thing is the European Union wants to have the Ukraine back in its sphere of influence because they want to basically make it another Greece or something like that. And it's so hypocritical to me. The whole thing is. It's just totally hypocritical. And I'll tell you this. If we're on hair trigger alert, well, considering the fact that our Mr. Lears are having problems in getting their proficiency exams passed, that doesn't give you a warm fuzzy, now does it?
Well...
I don't think it would. I don't think it would for anything.
No, no.
No, I mean, you know, it's just absolutely, absolutely nuts. I mean, I can remember when the Soviet Union fell apart and everybody said, oh, and we were told by Bill Clinton that no further missiles were pointed at any American city.
Oh, I remember when we talked about a peace dividend.
And I just thought to myself, you idiot, for saying something
like
that.
With the peace dividend, we closed some military bases, but did the defense budget shrink even an iota?
No. And, as far
and so we've got missile silos where you have to dog the lid with a crowbar, but we've
not the lid, the interior blast door.
Oh, okay.
Not the open lid. I mean, God. But I didn't mean to misrepresent.
Well,
that.
No. I don't have a real working knowledge base for those things. But on the other hand, the Navy is building a fleet of ships that can be taken down by a rubber raft, and the Air Force, Marines, and Navy are hell-bent on a jet that nobody needs
and
to oppose aircraft that don't exist.
And nobody wants, really. But
well, now, wait. Do remember, Robert in Australia dropped us a note last week saying that Tony Abbott had promised that they were going to buy a good 20 or 30 of the little suckers.
Well, that's just absolutely stupid because that aircraft is not...
Well, that's because Tony Abbott wants to be Sir Tony Knight of the Air.
Well, that aircraft has not been really proven to be worth the metal of which it's made. But it's just amazing to me how this thing is going on. But I just thought I would insert that news article that I saw 2 weeks ago on 60 Minutes about the hardened silos and also raise the question, why do we need these hardened silos anymore when we have one ballistic missile boat that can basically end the world as we know it? I mean, you're talking about 240 independent nuclear warheads, and that would certainly do quite a number on the world as we know it. And the only thing that could surpass the launching of something like that would be maybe when worlds collide, you know?
Yeah.
Like something like a huge, huge meteor that would basically have the same effect. And that's all I got to say. And we'll get you back on the air. And
hey, let's hope we can do it again tomorrow night. Nothing is guaranteed anymore.
Well, good luck with Chantel or whomever. And you went to a wrestling match last night?
Well, it was a rap concert, a hip-hop concert. Well, it was a white guy hip-hop concert, wrestling match.
Where in the world was this?
Oh, at the Beckley-Raleigh County Convention Center. Jim, I've never known you to be that silent for that long.
Why'd you go?
Had free tickets. Ferg wanted to see it.
Oh, no. You know, these wrestling things or whatever.
Oh, no. This is, whenever the last time you went to one of these was, you ain't seen nothing like this, Jim.
Were they in cages or?
Oh, no. It was just your standard wrestling ring, but it was also accompanied by periodic hip-hop acts.
Oh, dear God.
And it was hosted by a group of people whose shtick is to go about in clown face.
In clown face? You mean were the
let's just cut to the da, ya, we, you know, height. Yes, clown face.
My God, who in the world wants to see a bunch of ugly, fat, overweight men or steroids out of whatever do these?
Well, like I said, there was the one guy in the silver lame cheerleader panties, and you know, Ferg looked at me, and I looked at Ferg and went, Rocky. Yeah, so I figured you'd get a kick out of it.
And now what'd you say? I'm sorry. I didn't catch that.
Rocky.
What? Rocky?
Rocky. You know, Tim Curry. Come on. Dr. Frankenfurter.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just not at my best tonight. Excuse me.
Rocky.
Well, oh, God. And the reaction of the crowd was, were they going absolutely ape?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, they got into it. I mean, it was supposed to kill him, you know, and there were the fake blood capsules and Hollywood, the sugar fluorescent tube light bulbs. I mean, that stuff's full of deadly gas. If those things had been real, half the crowd would have cancer this morning.
Yeah, that's true, because neon is extremely dangerous, as a matter of fact.
No, these are fluorescents. It's mercury.
Well, that's what I mean. Okay. Well, listen, you have informed me, and I tried to inform you about something, and I'm going to let somebody else get on this line. And hey, you take care and have fun.
I'm going to try, Jim. You take care, too. Bye now.
Good night.
Jim calling from Beckley. Thanks, Jim. Back to the phones in a moment. Some random thoughts on tonight's program via Robert in Australia. One, greatest country in the world. We get that all the time from the lollies and the advertisers. Australia is the greatest country in the world. I usually respond with, why? Because I find the statement quite without meaning. I generally don't get an answer if someone says it to me in person. Two, rock and roll music is for morons. A line from an old 1950s movie that has always stayed in my mind for decades. And having been sent to Catholic school for 13 years, I heard endlessly from teachers about how disgusting the Rolling Stones were. And here they are, 45 years later, still going. Granddad's all, I think. P.S. Is this the steel wheelchair tour from that episode of The Simpsons? I remember that. Three, no one understands the Internet. A favorite British TV comedy of mine called The IT Crowd, Information Technology, had an episode where the head of the department, a young woman who knew nothing about computers, had to give a talk on their department. Her staff convinced her that the Internet, all caps, was a small black box with a red light on it that was usually located at the top of Big Ben. Where are the wires? It's wireless. The lords of the Internet have allowed us to borrow it for the afternoon. Expecting her speech to be laughed at, especially when she presents the Internet to the audience, the staff are horrified when everyone in the room believes every word she says. Later, the Internet is dropped and crushed, causing a massive riot in the room as everyone expects the world to suddenly come to an end without a functioning Internet. Yeah. Goodness me. Oh, and thanks to Sal. Sal finished off the last $10 of Darlene's challenge match offer. Thank you, Sal. That makes things considerably better, and that means we've only got $100 to go to sort of get square with where we need to be here at the end of the first week of May. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I was locked there for a second, saw that nuclear gloom and doom. I thought I was listening to Coast there, but y'all come out.
No, we didn't have any flying saucers, Jethro.
Well, that's that eye, Joe. I'm a master of the lateral eyeball from both sides of the eight ball.
Can you do it? Can you do it to two people at once?
Sure enough. Yeah, the 8-inch floppy disk, they keep those because they can't be hacked.
Is that what it is?
That's the rationale for it. So
I'll be damned. I guess that makes sense. Even the hackers don't have machines that are that old.
Exactly. So, yeah, they don't have anything that's, you know, it's obsolete. So they assume.
Can you still get Zork on those, Jethro?
I do not know. But listen, so you went to the New Age Traveling Road Show last night, did you?
That was New Age. I didn't see a crystal in the place.
Well, it's just like, you know, back, you know, it's a kind of a version of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, you know. The guys are traveling around, putting on those shows, and it's like a carnival show, something like that.
I think I would have been more, I think I would have been more comfortable with Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, to be quite honest.
But, you know, it's a, you've a, you know, it's a cultural thing, so it's getting a
little... Yeah, and I don't want to diminish anything. What really bothered me, I think, more than anything else was the use of a certain racial epithet and the misogyny. I'm of such an age that that's never going to be okay for me.
Yeah. Well, just our, you know, as a society, we're sliding a little bit into more materialistic, gross things like that, a certain portion of our culture is. So, but anyway, so you saw that show, but you cannot complete the circle.
Oh, no, there's a circle to be completed, Jethro.
10-4. And I'm telling you, you will be amazed and you will be dazzled because May 16th, unknown
hand. Oh, no, I know, yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be. Well, I don't know, maybe I'm going to be here.
He won't be on stage till like maybe 10:30 p.m. or later. But you do not want to miss him. He is a...
Yeah, unknown...
Unknown Henson.
Yes.
After his daddy.
Yes, his daddy's name was Unknown. It's on his birth certificate.
That's right.
Right. That's and for right. those who don't know, and he doesn't particularly like being referred to as such, he's not only the voice of early Kyler, he kind of is early Kyler.
Yeah, he kind of is. So, and yeah, there's some misogyny there, too. He used to have a cable show down in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Right, that's where the whole thing started.
Yeah, his wife was on there playing drunk girl, and he had a couple of other guys. I think one fellow died, and it kind of fell apart, but I've seen him several times.
He even put the act to bed after his wife passed away, and then...
Oh, is that what happened? I wasn't aware of
that. Yeah, and then decided, due to popular acclaim, to come back.
Oh, yeah, he is. I mean, he has a big following. Matter of fact, I've been to the V Club in Huntington a couple of times to see him. He is that good.
But and that's the thing. He is a hell of a guitar player.
Oh, yeah. And he'll play a couple of Hendrix, you know, he'll play Voodoo Child and some others, and, you know, he can really play. It's worth going to see. So, plus he has merchandise, too. I got a couple of T-shirts and stuff. So it's well worth seeing if you can get a chance to go and see him, especially for Ferg, too, because he can play guitar, and he's a character. You know, he didn't come out of character at all, and pretty good.
B-Rez put that together, you know.
Yes.
And so, and he called me when he got it, and he was like, you got to see this. I got to look at the calendar here. Because, see, I'm supposed to go back to D.C. and work on the 8th campaign.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be here.
Hot damn. Great. I mean, you do not want to miss it. He puts on a great show. He's one of the best guitar players you've ever seen. I mean, compared to anyone. No doubt. So on the voodoo guy last night, were there any chickens or anything involved?
No, none of that.
Just kidding.
No, not voodoo, hoodoo.
Hoodoo. Okay.
You know, as in, you remind me of a man. What man?
Yeah.
The man with the hoodoo.
Yeah.
Hoodoo? You do. What? Remind me of a man. The man with the power. Right.
He's on first. Yeah, traveling road show. It's like, you know, these guys aren't buying an enormous. It's like a traveling road freak show or something like that.
And they announced last night that they're going to be back with a full show come I'm not sure if it's August or October.
Oh, yeah, they weren't expecting the turnout, so I'm sure they were very happy about that. So was B-Rez. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I tell you what, in the after party last night, he was truly in his element.
Good.
I mean, he's a hell of a showman all by himself.
Yes, he is. So,
And why none of the... Otne Ute Itbray radio stations around there aren't paying him a plum ton of money to put them on the map and build ratings and build listenership. I don't know.
Well, because they're, and always have been, since the management took over, they're anti-intellectual. They don't want anybody with any good ideas or anything that they don't come up with first. Yeah. You know.
Can't you get, I mean, I can just imagine a certain general manager asking, can't you get those groovy Osmonds?
Yeah, not Pat Boone, you know.
Oh, stop it.
And bring in the White Buck show.
So. You've seen that early, and it's authentic, that early picture of Pat Boone with the popcorn box?
Not sure.
It's real. Bart Cop used to run it every now and then. It is a very real photograph of Pat Boone in the heyday of his popularity, standing there in all his Pat Boone-ness with his penis sticking through the bottom of a movie theater popcorn box.
All right. No white sport coat and pink carnation?
Not even a crustacean.
Yeah, well, he's sick. Yeah, he put out a metal album, too, so.
Oh man, that's right up there with the and I've heard it, the Ethel Merman disco album.
All right, yeah. So anyway, let's get off that madness. Yeah, because Henson, you do not want to miss him. He's band. He's got, you know, there's three of them, and they're tight.
By the way, Jim says hi, Jethro.
Hello there, Mr. Anderson, James.
Yes.
Anderson. Yes. So.
Well, no, I really will. I'll try to be there. I hate to miss Friday on the front porch, but this might actually.
Yeah. Well, Miss Jim Anderson needs to go there too.
Well, yeah. Oh, Jim would revel in Unknown Henson.
Oh yeah. So, and yeah, it's a great act as well. So anyway, and you all were talking about the Stones and the Beatles and things like that.
Yeah, I'm just pulling them out of the hat.
Oh yeah. So yeah, I was. They all kind of age well, but, you know, the Beach, I've been listening to the Beach Boys some, too. They've aged quite well as well. And in a strange sort of a way, youthful, spiritual sense, they were a very spiritual group, as a matter of fact.
Well, yeah, they were doing this sort of happy pop stuff, but the Wilson brothers got very much, you know, they went down that same spiritual, soul-seeking, acid-dropping road themselves.
Yeah, yeah. They were also coming from the heart, though, and some of those songs reflect that as well. Yeah, they were in with all the Maharishi deal.
Yeah.
And the transcendental meditation stuff until they got busted trying to do to one of the girls.
Yeah, well, I guess their Pet Sounds was kind of the Beach Boys equivalent of Sgt. Pepper's.
Yeah, that's kind of what broke Brian Wilson down, I think. He was trying to compete with them and put out something better than that, and I just, I guess the pressure got to him or something. That's when he went into his bedroom and didn't come out for, you know, what, 20 years?
Yeah.
So.
Which one was the one who drowned?
I think it was Dennis Wilson.
Yeah.
Then Carl, who was actually, yeah, he was a pretty good musician, guitar player and singer. He had some kind of cancer, so. That was Brian. He's crazy.
Yeah.
He was?
No, I just remember. I remembered a parody of a Beach Boys song, and the lyrics said something like, "Well, we can't take Dennis when we go for a swim because he's gonna get drunk and he's gonna fall in. He's gonna drown, 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 drown. He's gonna drown." Yeah, it was awful.
Charlie, don't surf.
Yeah. Hey, we're right up against it, Jethro. But it's good to hear from you, man.
I listen every night. Just don't call in much.
Well, don't be such a confounded stranger.
I lurk. I like to listen to you and Anderson and Mr. Stress and some others. So, Mr. Stress is awesome. He really is. So.
Yeah, he is indeed something. And hopefully, if the all the little packets hold hands, we'll be on the air tomorrow night, and maybe we'll hear from Mr. Stress.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right, Jethro, take it easy.
Bye, Bob. See you later.
Bye now.
Hanson, can't miss it.
Hey, what is it?
16th, Friday night.
No, it's madness.
It is madness. It's always been. It's getting worse.
I know. Later, Jethro.
Bye.
Jethro has been with us from the very earliest days. It's awful good to hear from him. Time to get out of here. Time is short. No time for outro music or the full credits or anything. Thanks, everybody, for being willing to tune into a foreshortened program and putting up with my profound frustration as well as my absolute and utter geezerness. Thank you very much. And hopefully we're back for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Later, y'all. Here comes Rick Smith.